Next case is 04-1325 and 1746, State of Ohio versus Kenyon Chandler and Philip Bledsoe. Ms. Andrews.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, counsel. I am Amy Andrews Sabino with the Office of Stark County Prosecutor John D. Ferraro, Jr., and I represent the appellant, the State of Ohio. We have previously sought leave for amicus to share part of our allotted argument time, but and I would also like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
I have just an initial question for you, and I think I saw the copy of the indictment someplace in the record, but what statute was this individual charged under?
This individual, actually both individuals were charged in the alternative under revised code 2925.03A1, drug trafficking.
Okay, so they were charged under A1, which contains the language offered to sell a controlled narcotic.
That's correct, and that's true in both cases.
Thank you.
The issue in this case is whether two offenders who offered to sell over 140 grams of crack cocaine, who then delivered a substance that appeared to be over 140 grams of crack cocaine, and were paid an amount appropriate for that quantity of crack cocaine, may be convicted of drug trafficking with major drug offender specifications when the substance that they delivered is tested and actually proves to be ordinary baking soda. The state respectfully requests that this court reverse the decisions of the Fifth District Court of Appeals and reinstate these offenders' convictions for drug trafficking and their status as major drug offenders.
Why wouldn't they be guilty of trafficking in a counterfeit substance?
Your Honor, counterfeit controlled substance, revised code 2925.37, has an element that we don't have here, the element of knowledge of the counterfeit nature of the substance. In a case that would be appropriate for a charge of counterfeit controlled substance would be one exemplified by State versus Mugney, where the individual attempted to sell the confidential informant Percodan on the street. Once he was arrested and taken down to the police department, he said to the police, "Hey, you don't have anything on me. I knew those were fake." In this case, the state never considered a charge of counterfeit controlled substance because we did not have the element of knowledge. There's no indication that Bledsoe or Chandler had knowledge of the counterfeit nature of the controlled substance at issue.
Well, and the counterfeit statute is much less serious than the one you originally charged.
That is correct.
Is that a prosecutorial choice to select which statute that the defendant would be prosecuted for? Could you have charged that?
As a representative of the state of Ohio, the state is going to look at what is the charge that they can prove. And in this case, the elements of the statute, 2925.03A1, drug trafficking, is what fit the facts for both Chandler and Bledsoe. I'm not aware, having talked to the trial prosecutor, that counterfeit controlled substance was ever even on the table, so to speak.
Part of the argument is that the sentencing for violation of that code section requires some evidence with respect to the substance that was transmitted between one party and the other. And it has to identify a controlled substance, and baking soda is not a controlled substance. What is your response to that position?
The Fifth District stated that the penalty portion of 2925.03, meaning the C4G portion of the statute,
yes,
that requires evidence of some detectable element of an actual controlled substance. In fact, Your Honor, what C4G states is that the drug involved in the possession, in the sale of, or in the offer to sell, that the drug involved in the violation consists of a controlled substance in the requisite amount. The fact is that the penalty section speaks in terms of the drug involved in the violation, not the drug that was actually delivered, not the substance that was actually tested and found to contain some detectable element of controlled substance. So it's the state's contention that that penalty portion.
There was no detectable trace of any controlled substance in this transaction.
That's correct. This was 130 grams of pure baking soda.
So, counsel, the crux of the state's argument here is that the offer was sufficient. When you offer to sell a prohibited item, in this case, crack cocaine, that meets the criteria of the statute. And then when you get into the sentencing, the reference is to the fact that the words were spoken, crack cocaine, in conjunction with an offer to sell, not that the bag of baking soda had to contain a trace amount of, at a minimum, a trace amount of crack cocaine or any other illegal substance.
That's absolutely correct. The state's focus is on the conduct that's prohibited, the actual drug dealing activity, as opposed to the result of the transaction, what is ultimately delivered. The only thing that I would point out in reference to that question, as I'm sure appellees will point out, is that the words crack cocaine were never actually used as such in the lead up to this final transaction.
So every time an individual says, hey, you want to buy some OxyContin? That's a crime, and we can prosecute them for it.
That is an offer to sell. That's correct.
So anybody who's even kidding around about what they might have as far as a prescriptive medication, I got some extra Percodin because my back was hurting. You want to buy some? Even though they weren't going to do it, that would be a crime.
Well, I think I think in terms of that being a jury question, if someone had just thrown that out jokingly, that is not going to get to the level of proving beyond a reasonable doubt that this person knowingly offered OxyContin, for example.
Well, you're asking us to write a rule of law that says any offer to sell a substance, regardless of what ultimately is transmitted, becomes, in this case, a major drug offense.
Well, I think that this.
We have an individual who's looking at 20 years in prison as a result of a sentence for doing nothing more than selling baking soda to unsavory purchasers.
But I would caution that you can't divorce this final transaction from the entire series of what we're talking about here. Philip Bledsoe participated.
I guess what I'm concerned about is, assuming that we would agree with the position advanced by the state, we'll have a rule of law that is now going to say, what would you have it say?
We would have the rule of law say that, in accordance with the statute, no person shall knowingly offer to sell a controlled substance. And a person who, that there's sufficient evidence that they, in fact, offered to sell a controlled substance, that person can, in fact, be convicted as a major drug offender if they offered to sell in the requisite quantity.
So BCI, or a local police department, puts out undercover agents who swim among this underbelly of our society, and when they get ready to round everybody up, they haul them all in and arrest them, and they do search warrants, and they find some drugs some places, and other places they don't find drugs, but they prosecute everybody because they, at some course of, while this person was undercover, their undercover agents, they said, we can get you some whatever. So you've got, on the strength of a testimony of an undercover agent, you're prosecuting all kinds of folks.
Well, respectfully, I think what you had in this case, though, is that you had tapes of these actual transactions. I mean, you saw these individuals in.
So in other circumstances that Justice O'Donnell is suggesting, you're suggesting a practical prosecutor would weed that out if all they have is just the testimony of an eyewitness.
No, not at all. No, I'm any prosecutor is going to look at the totality of the circumstances in deciding what the strength of their case is, what the appropriate charges to indict upon, and whether they're going to proceed accordingly. But I mean, in this case, the facts that we have, you can't divorce that final transaction from the fact that these individuals were on tape engaged in drug trafficking activity.
Was there any evidence that either Chandler or Bledsoe knew that that was baking soda?
There's no evidence in the record that I am aware of that either of those individuals ever made a statement to say, hey, it's fake, you don't have anything on it. Neither of them ever made a statement consistent that they didn't know what they were actually handing over was baking soda.
So your comment at the very beginning when you said that you didn't indict under the counterfeit statute because of lack of knowledge, and you had no knowledge of the other as well. You had no knowledge that this defendant knew it was or was not crack cocaine.
Well, we had...
This individual was a substitute, was he not, for the individuals that had originally been dealt with by the undercover officer?
Well, we had one individual who successfully sold crack cocaine to the confidential informant on three prior transactions, increasing amounts of genuine crack cocaine, increasing dollar amount. And then we have a final transaction where that individual, Bledsoe, gets out of the van because the $8,000 isn't there. He sends out his brother, Kenyon Chandler, who is a substitute only in the sense that he delivers the package to the van. Chandler brings with him a scale that has residue of crack cocaine on it. Chandler tells the confidential informant, we have to count out the eight per order of my guy. Chandler was fully involved in that final transaction.
This puts a whole new face on a snake oil salesman, doesn't it? I mean, if in the real world that substance was going to someone who thought it was cocaine, they found out it wasn't, wouldn't there be some consequences to the seller when the buyer delivered $8,000 and found out he got powdered sugar or, in this case, baking soda? Wouldn't there be some fear of retribution, and we get
Absolutely.
Into other activity?
I fully acknowledge that I think that part of what makes this a case of first impression when you're talking about the quantity is that if we're talking about a drug dealer transaction here, and that one of the individuals wasn't a confidential informant working with the police, there would have been an on-site test of that substance.
There's some indication that maybe they had ferreted out the identity of the confidential informant and knew what they were doing, so they knew they didn't realize they'd be facing some permanent resolution of this?
I want to acknowledge that there was in the record, I believe it was in the third transaction, there was an issue where the confidential informant read the scale wrong, and the police officer, I believe, even testified that was potentially, in his mind, a mistake, because that could really affect the credibility of the confidential informant. Your Honors, respectfully, I would ask, in accord with leave priorly granted, if our amicus could argue for the remainder of my time.
You have about a little more than two and a half minutes total time. So if you want to use it now or use it for rebuttal.
I'll be brief.
That's up to you. Mr. Crawford.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. Justice O'Donnell, if I could, I'd like to respond to, I think, your concern about the necessity of having a substance and having a substance present. I think it's critical to realize that this is an offer case. It's not a sale case or a possession case, but in fact an offer. And the Court has held, of course, that the knowledge requirement is that you are making an offer, and there can be little question, I think, here that that's what the defendants were doing. As the prosecutor recounted much of the circumstantial evidence, which I think, Justice Lansinger, this goes to your concern about what level of knowledge is required. They knew that what they were doing was offering crack cocaine, arriving at the scene of a prearranged drug sale, showing a bag that had been previously represented to contain cocaine, saying, let's do this and whatnot. Those are actions that an offeror takes to offer for a sale. And I think it helps to kind of analogize this to a contract situation. If what they were doing was legal, I don't think anyone would question that the confidential informant would have some sort of contract claim against Chandler and Bledsoe. They certainly made an offer, and they didn't perform. But just because they didn't perform doesn't mean they didn't make an offer.
Is it possible they were going to try to scam the purchaser and swing with the $8,000 and leave town?
I don't think there's any question that's what they wanted to do, but the question is not how they performed. The question is whether they made an offer. And I think all of the circumstantial evidence points to, in fact, a knowing offer of crack cocaine.
So every time we get a situation where the state can establish that there was a credible offer made, regardless of what happens with the rest of the transaction, we complete the commission of 2925.03A1, a major drug felony, even though there may never be any drugs found anywhere.
Well, whether or not there's
drugs. Is that right? I just want to know that that's what you think the law should be.
I think that is correct. Of course, the circumstantial evidence surrounding will weigh on whether there's a knowing offer. I mean, certainly if someone shows up with a fake substance, it could weigh in, but the facts of this case don't indicate that's what
happens. And if you persuade me to your position, then that becomes the law in the state of Ohio, and anybody who offers anything, regardless of what they have.
A knowing offer, Justice O'Donnell.
Well, I will sell you whatever I can sell you for whatever amount of money, without transaction of money, without transfer of anything. The fact of someone uttering the words, I will sell you X number of grams of whatever substance, constitutes a completion of the commission of 2925.03A1. Correct?
I believe that's correct, Justice O'Donnell.
Okay.
That's our position. It is
okay.
An offer to sell, and I see my time's expired.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you,
Crawford.
Mr. Crawford.
Mr. Patini.
May it please the court, counsel.
What's wrong with that last, I presume you're going to take issue with the fact that was just established by
Justice O'Connor's last exchange with
the appellant here. What's your position on that? Why is an offer, a credible offer, to sell a controlled substance not a violation of 2925.03A?
First, I'd like to say, in Stark County, you'd be very close to being charged with that crime by saying those words. That is exactly what is happening in our county. Exactly that. It doesn't matter if you intend to have anything, if you have a drug, if you don't have, if you have something fake, it does not matter. You're being charged, you're being convicted. And I think the issue, to answer your question, Judge, is, or Your Honor, I'm sorry, you may have a conviction under the law as we now stand, but when you go to sentence that person, that's where the glitch is. And the law, as I read it, says basically, if you hold something out to be real and it's fake, then you're on the hook for it as though it were real. But the sentencing guidelines differentiate between all amounts of different felonies based upon the amount of drug. They do not anywhere say there's no differentiation that says on the amount of substance that purports to be this drug. If it were to say that, I'm not necessarily sure we'd be here, but it doesn't say that. There is a problem, and as a result, what's happening on this offer to sale, offer to sale, offer to sale is it doesn't matter, in our county at least, it does not matter if you knew, didn't know, and somebody had asked a question on knowledge. I'm not quite sure why we have the counterfeit controlled substance statute. It doesn't matter because
Let me ask you this hypothetical, which may not be so hypothetical, but let's assume here the same facts, except that Mr. Bledsoe says, I'll sell you cocaine in the required statutory amount, but it's in my car. My car is two blocks away. I'm going to go get it. And he leaves to go get the cocaine. He gets to his car, and it's gone. There's no cocaine there. He comes back and says, I can't make good on my offer. Is that actionable? Is that X? Does X apply to that case?
In our county, the fact that you
I don't care about your county. This is a state issue. So, how do you read the statute? Would the statute apply? He thinks he has
statute. I think the statute would say that's an offer to sell. I think the problem then would be how do we sentence him? Yes, I believe that's sufficient to say. Under our current 2925.03, the trafficking, that would say it was an offer to sale. It would be consistent with the offer to sale line of cases. I think the problem then is you have a conviction. You say, okay, now we turn to sentencing. What do we do?
What I want to hear is answer. What do we do? What's your answer? From lawyers in these cases. So
I'm sorry.
We learn from lawyers in these cases. That's why I'm asking you.
I think if you don't suggest that the legislature makes some changes, I think you're going to have this issue countless times.
Aren't the facts somewhat similar in that, as I understand here, the defendant didn't know it was that he was going to transfer baking soda. In my situation, the defendant didn't know that he couldn't produce what he'd offered to sell.
I don't know knowledge doesn't matter because they have the prosecutors have the choice. Somebody had asked that question. They have the absolute choice whether they want to charge on counterfeit control or whether they want to charge under the real trafficking statute.
Well, but in my example, it wasn't counterfeit. He had it in his car and somebody took it. Some other underbelly got in and then took it.
The state of Ohio would say it's still an offer, it's still a conviction. But what their analysis stops there. They don't want you to figure out the second part of
it. You're his defense counsel now, and you've got this case.
Yes, sir.
What do you argue to the court as to why X should not apply? Where I have it, had it in my car, but somebody got a hold of it before I could get it and get the money for it.
At the trial level?
Mm-hmm.
If they have them on video sometimes like they do, it's a tough trial issue. Absolutely. It's an appellate issue. This case from the beginning, as far as I was concerned, this was always an appellate issue. It was tried.
That's what we thought.
Thank you.
What you're saying is that he was properly convicted of offer to sell crack cocaine, but it's the penalty that you're objecting to. Is that correct?
Correct. And the reason, yes, and because you don't have the language that says it doesn't differentiate on the amount of something that you offered or the amount of something that purports to be something real. It only differentiates on the amount of drug. The real reason that prosecutors don't like to use counterfeit controlled substances, it doesn't have any teeth. It's either a felony five or a felony four. What's the prosecutor's... that's six to 12 months.
What is the difference between the penalty, a conviction for offer to sell? Now, if it's true to read the statute that you have to, that there has to be some cocaine substance in order to determine a major drug dealer. So if we don't have that, then what is the difference? What are the degrees?
What is the difference between that and when
offer to sell, and in this case, we have baking soda. And so we can't go on to the major...
If you have an offer to sell that doesn't have anything, or if you have something and it turns out to be no controlled substance whatsoever, they're the same thing.
They're the same.
Mr. Patin,
whatever that...
Are you familiar with our decision in the Mugni case?
Yes, sir.
I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly. It appears to me there that our court has already indicated an individual who offered to sell Percodin but didn't really transfer Percodin, was convicted, and our court held that was a good conviction. Is that how would you distinguish the facts of this case from our precedent?
That didn't deal with a major drug offender specification first.
Yeah.
And second?
Well, I appreciate it's not a major drug offender, but I think factually it's the same offer to sell. And that's what we had here, and the court said it was enough to cause the conviction.
The one thing in reading that case, I never saw any discussion of the sentencing portion of that, and I don't know that was ever addressed in that case. And
so, is it fair to say that you're not arguing the offer to sell, but you're only arguing the ability of the trial court to sentence? I want to make sure I understand your position.
We are saying we understand that as the law presently stands, under the fact pattern that you discussed or any other, that the offer to sell language is good. That's okay. That is enough to sustain a conviction on a charge as though it under 29-2503. What we are saying is then you go to the sentencing guidelines and you cannot sentence that person because the sentencing guidelines have a flaw in them. And we're asking you to make a suggestion to fix that flaw, or else I think...
How do we fix it, though? That's my question. Do we fashion our own remedy, or do we reverse the conviction, let the guy go until the legislature fixes the sentence? What's your solution?
Yes, I think you uphold, reverse the conviction And you make a suggestion to the legislature to fix this problem. Yes, I think that can be the only solution.
There's not a lesser penalty they could attach, taking the major drug offender off the table here and...
Sure, counterfeit controlled, theft.
Based on the offer and the penalties that can be associated with that section of the code. There's nothing that fits according to your analysis.
Yeah. Under the offer to sell, as the case law stands, and as this court has said, that's enough to sustain a conviction. I just don't know. When you turn to sentence somebody, then you cannot do it, unless you want to give them the least restrictive sentence, that being a felony five.
So what you're saying is you'd be happy with larceny by trick in this case.
Your Honor, I'd be happy if my client were charged and convicted of the correct crime under the law. I believe my time has been up.
Thank you, Mr. Bertini.
Thank you, Mr. Bertini. Mr. Urban.
Thank you, Chief Justice Moyer. May it please the court.
What is your remedy? If you have a valid conviction, but you claim the sentencing statute doesn't apply, what do we do with this? Do we let all the defendants convicted of offers go? Until the legislature fix it, do we find a lesser remedy? What do we do?
Well, I think if you review the cases, you're not going to find many people who are convicted of major drug offender specification where there's no detectable amount of drugs involved. Mm-hmm. In other words, this MDO specification in this case has illuminated for us the problem that this statute creates when there is no detectable amount of drug involved.
You're telling me there's not a lot out of them, but what's the answer to the question?
I'm sorry?
You're telling me there's not a lot of them out there, but what's the answer to the question?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I think the legislature has to fix this. There's no question that the major drug offender specification in this statute is intended to look at major drug offenders who are out there trafficking drugs and dealing with those people who are trafficking drugs as a major drug offender based on the definition provided by the statute.
So we let the person reverse the conviction?
In the Bledsoe case, they've reversed, if you follow the Fifth District's ruling, they reversed the case, but he's already been convicted of the other charges that were companion to this case. So he doesn't go free. In the Chandler case, I believe his time has served. The 10 years that were added by virtue of the major drug offender specification would go away, and he would.
How do we reverse a conviction that you seem to concede is an accurate conviction?
Well, I haven't conceded that, and I think what the Fifth District
or your co-counsel has conceded that that's probably a good offer to sell under the statute. It just you just can't sentence them. So, what authority do we have to reverse a good offer to sell conviction?
As the law stands, and as we've read the cases that this court has applied previously, Patterson, Mugney, and so forth. Of course, the offer to sell is appropriate where there are consummated or unconsummated drug transactions. To answer Chief Justice Moyer's question earlier, how do we prove that the drugs are actually in the car? How do we know this drug offender is not lying still? How do I, as a criminal defense attorney, put my criminal client on the stand and prove that knowledge? I can't. The state has to prove that point, and what we're doing is asking the criminal defendants to turn around and prove certain elements of a crime that they should not be required to prove. This major drug offender specification, again, illuminates for us the problems that the trafficking statute has, when it comes to a case where there is no detectable amount of drugs. We have a statute already. We have the statute that deals with counterfeit controlled substance. Justice O'Donnell, you asked that question right off the bat. If we begin to go down the road that the state wants us to go down, we might as well just dismantle the counterfeit controlled substance statute, and while we're at it, dismantle all of the crime labs that are out there testing for detectable substances.
Counsel, how do you sustain a conviction or put the burden on the state to even indict when one of the elements is to knowingly offer for sale a counterfeit substance? When in this situation, according to the prosecutor, there was no evidence that either your client or co-defendant knew that they were selling baking soda for $8,000 in lieu of cocaine.
Well, I think in any criminal case, a jury can infer based on the facts that are presented to them what a person may or may not have known. In this case, I think they relied upon what the jury would infer about the previous transactions and the history of my client, Mr. Bledsoe. I think that's a misleading assumption based on the facts that were presented on each and every single charge independently.
Okay, so if you take that, you charge them with counterfeit in this case, the prosecutor can't prove that they knew it was counterfeit, then there's no conviction for counterfeit and no conviction for offer to sell, and the person goes scot-free, even though he accepted $8,000 for trying to sell something.
No, I think and in this case, with all due respect to Judge Sinclair, there couldn't have been a better path made for the prosecutor to convict these two individuals. The way that the rulings were made and the inability of counsel to talk about counterfeit control and the substance itself as a counterfeit, all these transactions were staged, set up buys with the CI. The prosecutor used evidence of testimony based on Detective Mnarchik, where he went back and forth about what this was. Was it soft? Was it softball? There's discussion about that. Everyone knows in the business that we are engaged in, that softball means powder cocaine. The jury was look at the jury questionnaire, the verdict forms. It's inappropriate for the jury to be given that verdict form and not be able to look as a jury instruction at counterfeit controlled substance. They can still infer that there was, how do you provide 130 grams of baking soda and then say, well, he couldn't have known it was baking soda? Well, maybe Mr. Chandler couldn't have known, but if the state's theory is correct that Mr. Bledsoe was behind all this, how do we then say he didn't know this was baking soda?
Well, then what do you convict someone of if they didn't know it was baking soda? They thought they were selling crack cocaine. What do you convict them of?
Well, I think that this court's already answered that question. And the answer is, if they believe it's crack cocaine, then they get convicted because they believe it is.
But then what do they get sentenced?
If it's, and again, here's the problem that Mr. Pettini, I think, is alluding to. When it comes to a major drug offender specification, then the statute has to be corrected by the legislature. This illuminates for us what the statute has created.
What if the legislature intended exactly the application for which the state argues? I mean, it could be that the legislature decide we've got so many drugs floating around in our state that we're gonna clamp down, and one way to clamp down is to say you can't even offer to sell drugs, even if you can't produce them. We don't have a constitutional issue. Nobody's arguing a constitutional issue, so I guess it's a question of what the General Assembly intended, is it not?
I hope that I don't live in a society that says that those terms uttered in that fashion are criminal. For my children, my grandchildren, I hope that's not what's happening here, because if it is, then we have criminalized those words as the Fifth District has instructed.
Do you suppose it's possible the General Assembly thought that prosecutors might use some discretion in who they prosecute, or you're not willing to leave it to that?
County, if they'd exercised the discretion that we thought they would have, counterfeit controlled substance would have been the issue. It would have been a different matter. We wouldn't be standing here. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've ever been here before on major drug offender, anyone that I know of, on major drug offender specification that illuminated the problems with the sentencing the way this case has.
Mm-hmm. I just want to clarify, because I heard two different things from you. Are you challenging the underlying conviction or not? The conviction, the fact of the conviction on offer to sell, is that an issue for us? Or are you giving that issue up, as I think your co-counsel said?
Well, I don't believe he actually gave it up. I think what we're trying to say is
basically said he was properly convicted under the offer to sell.
Based on the current law, and based on the current cases that really haven't addressed the major drug offender specification and how it deals with the situation.
But there are two issues here. It's the underlying conviction, and I think several of us have asked that question. Are you challenging the underlying conviction on offer to sell, or are you giving that up and looking solely at the sentencing ramifications?
I believe, yes, that we are challenging the underlying conviction, and there's another conviction that's available. It is the counterfeit controlled substance statute. Again, if we go down the path that the state wants us to go down, let's just check the counterfeit controlled substance statute.
But wouldn't the prosecutor have to have evidence that the defendant knew that the substance was counterfeit before they could indict under the counterfeit drug statute?
I think that's an issue for the jury to determine.
Hmm. I mean, if you want us to look at the counterfeit as a drug statute as being the appropriate here, and we go through the record, and it is, there's an absence of the knowing element contained in that record, we as a court certainly could never set aside and direct the to the counterfeit.
Well, again, as I asked Chief Justice Moyer, how do I, as a criminal defense attorney, prove that with the knowledge of any situation that
well,
or
I don't
any
think
intent?
The, I don't think that the counterfeit drug statute is even on the table for our consideration or anybody else's consideration. I think the crux of our problem here is reconciling the offer to sell portion of the statute and whether that is, whether there's any sentencing portion of the statute that can work in tangent with that, absence a testing for a controlled substance. The problem with the actual sentencing is that the way you read it is that the drug mentioned in the major drug offender section refers to the controlled substance, and you say that there has to be an element or a chemical analysis that requires a trace of the controlled substance, and the state is saying that's not necessary.
Well, but if you read the sentencing, there are certain amounts that then raise the different amounts of the different controlled substances to different levels of felony. Or
I understand that.
And so,
I guess what we're talking about, or what the state would have say, that the initial offer referring to the volume is sufficient to get you there, not the chemical analysis by a BCI or some other laboratory actually sustaining the content.
Right, and again, I think we're creating a vacuum that we don't want to create.
We're creating a what?
A vacuum that we don't want to create. We need to look at this in harmony with the counterfeit controlled substance statute, although I know you may not want to do that, but the legislature has to fix this problem. The major drug offender.
And I would agree with you that clarification is may very well be necessary, but that doesn't help us with our responsibility here today to write a paragraph admonishing the state, the legislature, to take another look at it.
And I feel bad standing here, and I'm nervous. I can't imagine what the responsibility you have in reviewing this and possibly overturning other cases with regard to the same issue are. But sometimes we have to do that. We're a society of laws. We're a society of rules. The police, the prosecutors should play by those rules when they go after what they characterize as major drug offenders. The legislature had to intend at some point, and I know I'm over my time, but if I can finish, please.
Very quickly, well over your time.
The legislature had to have envisioned that major drug offenders were people who were selling drugs, not people who were selling baking soda. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Urban. Ms. Andrews, you take your rebuttal. You have...
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
Track how much time you have. I don't see it here, so just talk, and I'll stop it when I think you're done. You have no time left, but go ahead. This is a gift.
I just want to conclude by stating that this is absolutely not a case about prosecutorial discretion. This is not a case about a prosecutor playing outside the rules. This is a case of an offense that has a penalty, and there's every evidence that the legislature took into account the offender like Philip Bledsoe, the offender like Kenyon Chandler, when they defined a major drug offender in Revised Code 2929.01X as an individual who is convicted of the possession of, the sale of, or the offer to sell a drug in the requisite quantity. And in fact, that is the activity that we have here. We have Bledsoe and we have Chandler offering to sell over 140 grams of crack cocaine, and they are properly sentenced as such.
Do we think, I suppose you do, that the General Assembly did want to leave all these decisions to the discretion of 88 prosecutors in Ohio? Defense counsel obviously are concerned about the person who really has no business in selling drugs, but they happen to make a statement to someone, and now they're charged.
I think it's not a question of discretion. I think it's a question of we already have a statute here that fits the behavior at issue. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.
All rise.